I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
You're listening to Down to Agribusiness with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hi folks, I'm Jack Kennedy and welcome once again to another week of Down to Agribusiness, joined once again by Phelim O'Neill. Phelim, good to have you on the show again.
Morning, Jack.
Phelim, you had the pleasure of sitting down and listening to the Ag Commissioner while he joined the IFA Council this week. Talk to me, first impressions. Obviously, there's a front page story in terms of farmers need more cap support, the Ag Commissioner says. But talk to me about your impressions, I suppose, from as he spoke to the IFA Council and kind of what your kind of feeling was when you're walking out the door.
Okay, Jack, well, this is the Commissioner's first time in Ireland. I think it's fair to say that expectations in the audience of the IFA Council and a few other guests, including ourselves, were pretty low. And we're pleasantly surprised. The Agriculture Commissioner very definitely is on top of his brief. He spoke without notes. He recalled facts and figures and detail in a way, I think, that impressed his listeners. And he made it very, very clear that he was on the farmer's side, if you like. Now, people that's looked at the farm to fork strategy and seen the direction of travel on the cap policy wouldn't have thought that. But he was very forcefully making the point, look, that he needs the support to push for this. He highlighted that the cap is currently just 0.3% of European Union GDP, whereas we spend 2% on defence, for example, and that it wasn't adequate to deliver the food security that's needed. So I think the Commissioner caught a few of us by surprise with his very, very strong pro-farmer line. Now, look, okay, you can say...
Was he playing to the gallery, Phelim? Like, was he just playing to the gallery?
That's the bit that I was just coming on to say there, Jack. You know, you could say, look, it was the audience, he knew his audience, and he was always going to say that, and it wasn't going to cost him anything to say that, to really give the difficulty of the position of an Agriculture Commissioner in Brussels, fighting amongst all of the other colleagues, the 27 colleagues at the Commission table, to say that, look, I'm struggling here to get the share that agriculture needs. Please help me with your lobbying. Please be targeted with it. So, you know, I have to say he walked the line and walked it very well. But look, he's on the record. We have it recorded in this week's Farmers Journal. There's comprehensive reporting from our colleagues, Pat O'Toole and Barry Murphy. And I think it's there in black and white now to hold him to account.
But Phelim, is it also fair to say that, sure, he's walking out the door to an extent, you know, in terms of, you know, I mean, he's not going to be around. Like, effectively, the cap plan that starts next year, I'll call it 2023. Like, I mean, effectively, it's a food production reduction plan, you know, the kind of a way. And he is instrumental in that, like.
Yes, he is linked with it. He would say that, look, you know, that the world has changed, that there's now a greater appreciation of food security. I think that's fair to say. But the driver if that hasn't been the European Commission, you know, and if you look across his Commission colleagues, particularly Vice President Timmermans, they're very much holding the line on farm to fork and taking the focus away from production to the environment. Now, the direction has came more so from the council ministers, from the heads of state, because they have seen the consequences of Ukraine from a defence point of view, they've seen it from an energy point of view, and it's become an increasingly consciousness is growing of the effect of not having access to Ukrainian grain for world markets for the later part of this year. So I think the Commission will get pushed a little bit more on that side. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's not, and again, I had the opportunity to speak to a former commissioner recently, Franz Fischler, and he was suggesting strongly that farm to fork has perhaps went too far down the environment road, and that back in his day, there was a midterm review that launched a major reform. He's suggesting that the same would be here again. So look, I think it's there, all's to play for. And again, he also referred to the national plans, the CAP strategic plans, that there was still time there to have an input to that. So I think there's a case and an opportunity there for the farm lobby to focus the minds to make a play to get some bit of a relaxation away from the environment towards more productive farming.
But are they all just saying this now, Phelan? Like, given like where the ball is in play now, you know, given the kind of the peace that's happening in Ukraine and in Russia, and given where food inflation is going, and I mean, it's all very well now, you know, but I mean, like it's not where the direction where farmers are being pointed to, you know, the direction of travel. The commissioner are saying.
Yeah, I think many farmers would share your cynicism there, Jack. We have reported what he said. And of course, you know, talk's cheap. It'll be actions speak louder than words. We'll be looking now to see if anything happens out of it, or is it just a case he has ticked the box, he's went to Ireland, he has spoke to farmers, and he'll move on. He is over halfway through his term of office at this stage. As you say, the new cap doesn't take effect until next year. He's only there for a very short time after that. So it will be, maybe you could say the next commissioner that will deliver a meaningful look at farm to fork. I think that's a legitimate view. As I say, in the Journal this week, we've concentrated on what he said as opposed to maybe teasing it too deep, because we didn't get the opportunity to speak to him directly on a one-to-one basis.
Yeah. The other interesting piece, I just see a piece, Phelan, that you had on the US beef industry and the factory workers. And I was doing a piece with Ornua, you know, just in terms like Ornua have over 3,000 employees now across the world. Ornua is formerly the Irish Dairy Board. They're our central marketing arm for dairy product out of Ireland, you know, mainly butter and cheese, you know.
The Kerrygold brand champions, I suppose, is the way that most people will recognise them.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, it's a, like, look, there's been a lot of naysayers about Kerrygold and Ornua down through the years. And look, some of it rightly so, in that this collective type of a marketing arm, really, you know, it's yesterday's kind of baby, you know, in terms of like individual companies are now doing it themselves and have done it themselves across Europe and across the world. And this collective piece kind of was seen as kind of prehistoric or too old. But like, I mean, in fairness to Ornua, like they're continuing to deliver. And like the co-op members, like their shareholders are continuing to deliver a certain amount of, well, a large proportion. They've upped the amount of product they're putting through Ornua. So like they obviously still believe that there's something in this branded piece.
Jack, coming from the beef and sheep meat side of the road, I think there's something in Kerrygold that dairy farmers should be very, very proud of and should defend jealously. Now, look, not every litre of Irish milk is sold under the Kerrygold brand label. It's a relatively small proportion. There's a big commodity dimension. But listen, you have a premium brand there, not in Ireland just. You have it across Europe and, more importantly, the United States. It's the second highest value brand, the butter brand in the United States. Yeah. And something to just look at a kind of the Me Too versions, as I would describe them, the solo runs. If you look at the marketplace, they don't command anywhere near the same premium that Kerrygold is. Kerrygold is the established one. What the actual risk is that if we have an alternative suite of brands emerge over a period of time, that they might eventually undermine the value in that Kerrygold brand. You know, beef farmers in Ireland look with envy, and we're trying to get this grass PG CGI for grass-fed beef established. You know, we're 50, 60 years behind where Kerrygold is. And I suppose looking at this from through the beef farmer's eyes, I would be saying guard that jealously, try and protect it, defend it at all costs. Because, you know, whether or not the beef industry can ever develop a brand or not remains to be seen. It's very difficult. You know, it's not a co-op-owned structure the same as the dairy industry. And private companies are very much interested in doing their own thing, and that collective will that is needed to effectively have a national brand, much, much more difficult to achieve. But it's there with Kerrygold, it's there, and Jack, judge it on results. Look at their new figures. You can tell me the detail on those, but I think they're the ultimate test.
Yeah, you're right. Like, I mean, the numbers do stand up. Now, they're back a touch. So they released their 2021 results this week, and they're back a touch, but principally because they delivered more back to their members. And there has been a bit of a row going on that here was our new, making decent profits on the back of, I call it, dairy farmers and co-ops investing in steel and investing in more cows and on-farm production. And here were our new, and to an extent, there was a kind of a suggestion that, like, here were the soldiers doing all the works on the farm and the co-ops, and then our newer were coming along and kind of taking increased profits out of it. Now, like, that's their business. Like, I mean, there's no one giving out about that, but they probably wanted a bit more of a share of the business and the kind of returns. So that piece has increased, and the 78 million now has been paid back to members, to co-ops this year, or 2020-21, and that's up from, like, you go back 5 years and that was 30 million, you know. So I mean, it's up to 78, it's more, and that's what the members.
So it's delivering less for the co-op but more for the farmers, and so that can only be a good thing, Jack.
Yeah, it's positive. There's no doubt about it. Like, but look at Phelan, coming back to the core piece, as you say, like, there's butter and there's cheese on shelves in the US, the UK, Germany, particularly, that's going in at selling at a premium price. Like, any time that you're putting a product on a retailer's shelf and you're getting some bit of a premium, like, that's a win almost from the get go, isn't it, Phelan? Like,
absolutely, and you know, it's something I'm going to be looking into in the coming weeks here, just, you know, in terms of where Irish beef is priced on continental supermarket shelves compared to other alternative products. But I can have a wager with you now. I've seen it before. Kerrygold will be there on that shelf, and it'll be the highest value butter brand on the shelf. That's a win-win.
It is. So I was having the chat then with John Jordan, the CEO of Arnua, this week, and I was talking about kind of the whole, you've a piece there from Michael Haverty from Anderson's in the journal there on ag inflation, but I was talking to Jordan on, you know, food inflation and what's going to happen, an expensive brand, a kind of premium brand, if we go into a bit of a recession, if people do less shopping, if food inflation hits for 10%, you know. I mean, one of the things he was saying, Phelan, like, and it'd be interesting just to get your thoughts on it, but he was saying that maybe the brand piece might protect that a little bit more. But it comes down to the specifics in the individual markets, like in the US, like how will that play out in the big retailers in the UK, in Germany? It's an interesting space to see. If that recession, like, that seems to be kind of all economists, no matter where you talk to, they say, listen, it's in the post, the recession is coming. So it's just a case of when and how to kind of manage it, you know. But if that recession piece happens, like, how will a premium brand?
Firstly, Jack, a recession's good for no one, you know, but in terms of having defenses against the recession, if we think about it, the people that are currently buying Kerrygold, for example, are not the people that are looking for the value brand. They are not the people that are as price squeezed, shall we say, when it comes to food purchases as others are. There's still a big market for the value brands in all supermarkets in every country in the world. And that's where the brand value gives a premium. And it's a little bit like the Coca-Cola market. Coca-Cola sales will be targeted at those that are paying that little bit more for their cola, that are prepared to pay for the brand, that have the disposable income. And recessions and hits in disposable income hit the poorest in society first. That's the reality of life. They will be shopping the value brands. They will be the ones that will feel the squeeze first. And I'm not saying Kerrygold or any other brand will be immune to it. They won't, but they will withstand it, and it is a defensive mechanism to it. And you know, I think we've seen that, you know, even across grocery sales, which have actually fallen this quarter. We reported briefly on it this week, that grocery sales are back, but some some products, particularly on the meat and dairy side, have been particularly strong, which kind of goes against the trend. It is people that are not going into summer season, they're still buying their barbecue products. Now, as you say, the worst is still to come, so we'll not be too bullish about what we see in that department.
But it comes back to what you were saying there, that if the company is set up well, and if it's the numbers are kind of delivering, well, then you can't be too critical of it. And if you look at turnover, has increased up to 2.5 billion now for Kerrygold, up from 2 billion 5 years ago. Their EBITDA is give or take 100 million, down a touch from maybe 107 million in 2020, but that's because of more going back to the members, etc. And like they're virtually debt free, despite, you know, having made a decent investment. They paid 48, 50 million for a business there in the US the back end of last year, you know. So they're virtually debt free. So like they're probably, you could say the business is in a good place to kind ride it out.
Would we be fair to say, to look at those results, that's as good as it gets? From a farmer perspective, from the co-op perspective, from the Ornua perspective itself, I think there's a degree of fairness, shall we say, in those strong results, and the profits have been shared back to the people that put in the hard yards on the farm.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. I think we've called that out this week. But I suppose the challenge then going forward for our new, of course, is that we're pretty much, if coming back to tie in our previous conversation in terms of the commissioner and what's happening in food policy in the EU, etc., the days of the increasing milk pool and more products going towards our new and that continuous upward curve in terms of more product, they're probably coming to an end, you know, and it's going to be back to, you would say, if you were to look at it now, here and now, 2022, looking forward for the next 10 years, that there's not going to be the same level of increase, and you're going to have to be looking at efficiencies and trying to get more value from the product that you have already.
But Jack, we're not going to be unique in that in a European context. You know, every country in Europe, you know, with what the commissioner said, the whole farm to fork space, that's as applicable in the Netherlands and Germany and as it is here. So every producer in Europe is going to be squeezed in terms of their production. There's certainly very little headroom left for further expansion across all of Europe, including Ireland, I'd say, and you look at the Environmental Protection Agency report this week, it sort of reinforces that. So I think it's a case, on the other hand, the world is going to need more dairy. Like the UN FAO report for 2030 highlights that the 95 million more tons are going to be required. So, you know what, I'd argue, if you take a 10-year view of it, it actually looks quite positive there, that there will be a squeeze on supplies everywhere, and the markets will be robust. So maybe we can't produce as much as we would like to, but if we can get more for what we do produce, maybe that's not a bad thing either.
No, exactly. You're right. I mean, and ultimately, that's what, you know, farmers, I think, would prefer that. They'd prefer to get more for quality that they produce rather than getting the commissioner's kind of handout. I think that's fair to say of farmers nearly right across the world, again, and including Irish farmers.
Absolutely. Like, you know, we do have uncertainties coming down the track at us. You know, the whole Brexit issue hasn't gone away, for example.
It's where is still that rumbling now? Like, where, just in a couple of sentences, like, where is that?
John Britton, former Taoiseach, contributed a very substantial piece to this week's journals on page 24, and I would encourage you to read it if you have an interest in the subject. And he's basically saying there, like, that with the UK going off in the solar run, that they're going to rewrite the protocol in a way that suits them. He's basically saying that, and I think he's correct in saying this. The EU simply cannot live with that, because if they do, then that totally undermines the entire single market, which is what the European Union is ultimately all about. So, you know, the conflict at this stage, unless there's a major change of heart, I would say, on the UK side, then the conflict's inevitable, you would have to say, at some time in the coming months. Now, there is a school of thought that say that, look, UK have been down this road before, that is part of the negotiation tactic and all that. That remains to be seen. Hopefully it is. But look, the bottom line is, Jack, if it comes that the protocol collapses, then that's a messy situation for Northern Ireland dairy farmers that sell their milk to Southern co-ops. It's a messy situation for the Southern co-ops, particularly in the border areas that would source a lot of milk in the north, and it's a messy situation for Ireland, full stop, because if the EU border control checks aren't carried out, then it essentially takes Northern Ireland place in the single market, cannot be sustained, and that essentially pushes the checks back on us. Now, there's a whole lot of things have to go wrong for that to happen, but that's the ultimate end game, that you that those checks move eventually to Dublin and Rosslea Airport. Hopefully we never get there. But look, Brexit is something that's always rumbling away there. It's now 6 years since that vote took place in 2016. It's still not resolved, and it's something that's rumbling on and rumbling on and could at any time become a major problem. Hasn't yet, hopefully never will, but John Bruton lays it out very well this week just as to what the end game here can be in this.
Phelim, excellent. Good to catch up. Good to get a kind of a feel for inside the stories in the Farmers Journal this week. Lots more in the Farmers Journal, as you said, on the shelves now. Thanks, Phelim. We'll chat again next week.
Cheers, Jack.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.